This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, folks. And we have a full studio this morning with Wandile joining us. How's it, Wandile?
Good, good. I'm so glad to be back. I hope you guys missed me as much as I missed you guys.
We did.
It looks like you guys did. So I'm happy to be back.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. And we have Lawrence.
Howdy.
How's it?
Absolutely wonderful, wonderful, wonderful time to be. I'm glad to be back.
Glad to be back.
Yeah.
Okay.
You are uncharacteristically chirpy for a Monday.
You would also be chirpy if you'd spent the last few days driving two-door sports cars.
Fair enough.
That's a good point.
Two-door sports cars. Tell us a bit more about your two-door sports car weekend.
Oh, I was in a BMW Z4. And prior to that, I was in the new Toyota Supra.
Yeah.
That was I ran into you at the airport.
Okay.
Sounds like pain and suffering. Hello, George.
How's it, Martin? How are you?
All right, thanks. Just cold.
Cold?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is cold this morning, isn't it?
Yeah, some ice on my windshield this morning. It was the first time I've ever seen that. It's crazy.
Yep, I've seen the option of heated screen washers before.
Yeah.
Now I understand why.
Ah, okay.
Global warming is real.
Born in what?
Global warming. It's
I thought you said serious. Born somewhere. Global warming, you're right. Okay, well, let's get right into it and let's check out what's happening in the news of motoring around South Africa and around the world. And the first story we're getting into is how many cars have been sold in SA for the last year, and is it an important thing to take note of? So, you know, the economic conditions are tough in the country. I think everybody can attest to that. But at the end of the day, we are still selling cars. And I think that's the most important part.
Still moving metal.
Still moving metal, you know. So, you know, in terms of Gauteng leading the way, which is not, I suppose, a surprise, with 163,126 cars being sold so far in 2019. I mean, that's a lot of cars.
How many does the Gauteng normally sell? Is that a high number or is it a...
Well, I mean, you can just take 63 divided by the number of months that we've had to the end of June. Yeah. So first 6 months of the year, you know, Gauteng selling what, 10,000-11,000 a month?
Just more than 10,000 a month.
Just more than 10,000 a month. And followed closely by, I mean, I think KZN always surprises me in the, selling 22,937 cars, and then the Western Cape at 17,780 cars. You know, I always wonder why the Western Cape doesn't sell as many cars as KZN does. And as a matter of fact...
Traffic.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe it's motorbikes.
Maybe it's because they have a working public transit system. Well, mostly.
You think they do?
Mostly.
Well, I suppose they've got that that bus service called My City Bus or
that's
something.
It.
Eh?
Yeah.
I used that once or twice just to test it out, and it does seem to work. It does seem to work. Yeah.
And the rail service is really good as well, I heard.
Well, when it's not burning.
Now, Martin.
Oh, goodness gracious me. Okay, so, you know, amongst those cars sold in Gauteng, KZN, and the Western Cape, the most popular car is still the VW Polo Vivo. Surprise, surprise.
Is it a surprise?
No, it's not really. I mean, Volkswagens are always popular, and the Vivo is the high-value option in the range.
Yeah. Or so. I mean, the Polo Vivo managed to sell 2,571 units and outsold its Polo siblings. You know, I'm not surprised that the Polo sells as many as they do. So, you know, good on VW. But our next story kind of puts the VW Polo into context, which is the most hijacked cars in South Africa.
The Polo Vivo.
And the top 10, well, besides getting into the list, believe it or not, I don't know if this was a shock to me. There's a hijack every 32 minutes.
I thought that number was a lot higher. It would be like every 5 minutes.
Oh, you mean Every five, like, oh, yeah. Okay. High as in more frequently.
Yes.
And 30 minutes is still pretty high, though. It's,
which, yeah, every 32 minutes is a hijacking, which means that 46 cars are hijacked every single day in South Africa.
Yeah. Incredible.
Well, that kind of explains the sales figures. it's like you can buy a new Fortuner, and then you can buy a new one in 3 months' time, and the insurance pays out, and then you can buy another one in 3 months' time.
Well, I mean, I don't know if people, I hope people don't experience hijackings to that rate where you get, you know. So these statistics come from C-Track, and the top 10 most hijacked passenger vehicle brands in the following order are VW. Tops the list. Not surprising.
Could I guess?
I mean, if it sells the most, maybe it's the most popular. Maybe that's the reason it's the most hijacked. Second, Toyota. And this is just brand specific. It's not model variant specific. The third most hijacked car in South Africa is a Ford. And then a Citroën. I wouldn't have thought Citroën would be fourth.
As well, yeah.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Hey? Citroën is fourth. And then a Kia. And then Hyundai. Hyundai is not surprising to be on this. Pretty popular car. And then seventh on the list, I thought this one would have been higher, is a BMW.
I suspected that as well. I thought it'd be like at four.
Yeah, yeah. Eighth on the list, less than BMW, is the Audi. And then ninth, the Renault. And then tenth on the list, a Chevrolet. And the fact that they've left the country is surprising.
Yeah.
That they're actually on the list.
2 years ago, they left and they're still on the list.
Yeah.
Mind you, so is Citroën.
True, true.
Where's Mercedes-Benz on this list? I would have thought that...
good, very, very good question.
That would be there, yeah.
Yeah. Well, why is Mercedes-Benz not on the list?
Because they're difficult to steal.
Maybe that's the thing, is yeah. They're very difficult to steal. Why are they difficult to steal?
Well, a lot of the new cars now have got remote keys. So if they throw you out the car and you got the key in your pocket,
yeah,
they're going to get 100 meters down the road and the car's going to die.
But that's most cars, right?
Well, no, a lot of the lower end cars that we're talking about that take up the top six positions on that list are very low tech. So they still have a key with an ignition and, you know.
My scary takeaway from these statistics, 35% of all cars were Volkswagens. There's the little graph attached, if you can see that.
Yes.
And next up is Toyota with only 18% of all cars.
Well, that's in the passenger vehicle category, right?
Yeah.
In the sports utility vehicle, the list changes entirely.
Completely.
Completely, yeah. Where the number one most hijacked SUV is a Toyota.
Fortuner.
Mm. And then second to that, this was a total surprise, a Land Rover.
The thing is, though, I don't think a lot of people realize the fact that most of these cars end up across the border. They don't get stolen and kept here.
Or they get stolen for spare parts.
And they end up across the border. So a lot of these cars are ordered according... stolen according to order. So some oak in Moz or, you know, is sitting there going, okay, I want 20 Fortuners for the end of the month.
Yeah.
And his crew goes out and... So bombs Pretoria North or West.
Where's the Land Rovers going then?
I think the Land Rovers are going to breakers' yards for spares.
Yeah.
Speaking as a Land Rover owner, that seems fairly reasonable.
So after Land Rover is Nissan.
I
suppose the X-Trails and the old Navara. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, Navara.
Then fourth, Mahindra. And fifth on the SUV list is a VW. So... which would be the SUVs like the Tiguan. And then sixth on the list, which was surprising, a Jeep. I wouldn't have thought that...
Guy's got no taste.
Okay. Seventh on the list, the Porsche. You'll be interested to find out whether that is the Macan or whether it's Cayenne.
Probably.
And then eighth on the list is Renault, and ninth, Ford, and tenth, Daihatsu.
Which has left South Africa years ago as well.
So very surprising that I suppose in both the passenger vehicle list as well as the SUV list, you can't say that a car is not going to get hijacked.
Yeah, really
it was actually a very interesting thing. I did an advanced driving course and it was about, making yourself safer. It was early 2000s. The instructor actually asked, who here thinks that your car will not be hijacked. And everybody puts their hands up, and then he says, okay, well, what car do you drive now? It's a Ford, you know, Ford Focus, and there's a, you know, VW Golf and everything. And one guy at the back said, a Peugeot 508, you know. Okay, yeah, nobody's going to touch your car. You're fine. You can just sit in the back of the class, you know.
It seems like there's quite a close correlation to the you did the story on the SUVs, I think it was 2 weeks ago. And it seems like the cars that are most sold are also the cars that are most hijacked.
See. So if you want, I mean, it's that is a bit volume based.
Yeah.
So demand and supply, I suppose, like Martin says, or Lawrence says, it dictates the appetite of the hijackers.
Drive a Tata.
Yeah, they won't touch you.
Yep. But look, anyway. I know I'm at risk. I mean, I have an Land Rover in the garage, so that's number two.
Don't want to be your insurance company.
And my daily driver's a Toyota.
So what kind of modus operandi do these hijackers use? So firstly, filling stations. Hijackers often approach the vehicle from the blind spot, and you're kind of relaxed at a filling station because, you know, more than likely I would imagine people are looking at their phones,
yeah,
and stuffing around. But filling stations seem to be a way in which these guys pounce. The second is fake blue lights.
Police.
Fake police, yeah. Hijackers pose as traffic officers and police officials and get vehicles pulled over. And then third, hijacked at home.
Yeah, driveway. Mm.
In your driveway, yeah. which I think is a long time method of or modus operandi of the hijackers. And then the follow me home method is often used as well. And then we spoke a couple of weeks ago about the tap method, where they tap on your back window or your passenger window to distract you, but the actual hijacker with a gun is getting himself ready on your driver's side.
I think just being aware is the best way to avoid being hijacked, though. I think it's kind of avoidable if you're always looking at your surroundings.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially, believe it or not, when you're driving from the airport or from the Gautrain station.
Constantly be aware.
Constantly be aware.
And leave yourself some room to get out of a situation. You know, try and not get boxed in by other cars, by curbs. You know, curbs are difficult, but as long as you can drive over the curb, it's okay. But
that's why SUVs are so popular.
It's a good point, actually. I wonder if most people drive SUVs for the safety reasons, because it's high up. You know, so get your windows tinted. If somebody can't see into a car, it's less likely that they're going to target a car, because they need to be able to see what they're getting themselves into. I was reading something the other day in terms of house break-ins. And guess what the biggest thing that house breaking and entering thieves fear the most?
Cats.
Dogs.
Snakes.
Dogs. Little dogs inside the house.
Making a noise.
That's their biggest deterrent. You know, electric fences and beams and all those things do work, and they are a deterrent because they make a noise. But I suppose their biggest modus operandi is surprise. And the same with a car. Don't let them surprise you.
Okay, so I'll start driving around with
my dog in your car.
With my pit bull in my little Toyota.
I'll just snake in the car.
Snake in the car. Put that on the dash.
I've got pet snakes. I'll just drive around with one in the car.
You have pet snakes?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
They don't bark, they don't poo in the lawn, they don't eat out of the garbage. They're the perfect pet.
What pet snakes have you got?
Okay, 1.2 meter long corn snake and then a small little python. Okay. So they live in the lounge. Yeah. I feel very sorry for anybody who comes in. They don't like snakes.
Goodness gracious me. Oh, well, that's I suppose that's the main news of the week. And next up, let's get into our grid talk and start to talk a little bit about Formula One. And we have one dealer in the studio so that you know, he can give us his rundown. And we've got a bit of an interview coming with Valtteri Bottas and Max Verstappen in a few minutes as well. But what did you think of the last race in England?
That's why I came. I came just for this, because I just wanted to see the look on your face when I asked you how you felt about the race. But how I felt about the race is it was easily my favorite race so far.
Yeah.
I love Silverstone. There's so many turns. It's quick. It's an incredible track. And I think the battles that we saw between Mercedes, Hamilton and Bottas, as well as Leclerc and Max, was the stuff of dreams. It was like a script. You couldn't script it.
Yeah, you couldn't script it. I mean, I suppose the thing that surprises me is that the Ferrari,
yeah,
theoretically, is actually faster on a fast track, and they still managed to lose.
I mean, Vettel won last year in Silverstone.
Yeah.
But I think it's just what I've noticed is just the strategy that Ferraris have is quite questionable.
Strategy? That must be a foreign word to them. I'm quite sure they don't know what you're talking about.
Even when the safety car came and everyone was rushing into the pits, it just seemed like they got it wrong. Charles came out and he's like, "What's going on? I was in third and now I'm fifth. You know what happened?"
I'm sure that those guys all sitting on the pit wall drinking espressos going, "I don't know, maybe he can't come in, I don't know, get the tires." They don't care.
It can happen tomorrow.
No, it was an incredible race.
I think you're absolutely right. I think Mercedes-Benz just have a more focused team. They don't necessarily have the better car, because we've seen Red Bull beat them, we've seen Ferrari beat them, and it's been situations where Mercedes-Benz have actually got the strategy wrong, or where they've not been focused, or where they've crashed out. But by and large, I don't think they're unbeatable.
I mean, we saw in qualifying as well, both of them made a mistake, but they still managed to get on top, which for me was a bit shocking. Yeah. I think there's a little bit of fear that might be coming from the rest of the grid as well to, you know, give him more, except for Max. He seems like he's the only person who's actually trying to do anything about this domination.
Yeah.
And even with him, I really wanted to see more of him inside the race. Obviously, we had that incident with Vettel.
Yeah.
Which I'd like to ask you about, you know, how you felt about that, because it's sad to see what's happening.
It's sad to see. I mean, I wouldn't blame Vettel. I think it was a racing incident. However, he's a Formula One driver, which means that he should have seen that corner's coming, and he should have known Max is going to break.
And he's a four-time world champion.
Yes. He should have known that Max is going to break. And he should have known that, I mean, I'm not a racing driver, and I know that when you get in behind a car that close, you've got less drag, which means that less stopping power, which means that the car in front of you is going to stop faster. Because this car in front of you is trying to push the air out of the way, you don't have the air problem. So given all of that stuff, I think he should have known.
Yeah.
But it was still a racing incident.
Well, there are some opinions from the Red Bull team. If you remember, Vettel got his first job in Formula One driving for Red Bull.
Yeah, that's where he won his championships.
That's where he won his championships as well. And Helmut Marko, presumably still involved with Red Bull, says Vettel needs to consider leaving Ferrari in order to become successful again. Wow. And another dude from Red Bull said, he's not a tough guy like Schumacher or Alonso. He needs to feel unconditional support. And he had that with Red Bull. And he probably doesn't have that at Ferrari.
Anymore.
That's a good point.
Because ever since Leclerc came in, he's been, how can I put this, completely overshadowed.
Yep.
He was the golden boy.
So does he need to be melancholied in order to win?
I think molly-coddled. He needs to be.
Molly-coddled. What did I say?
So that kind of ties in with your theory that he's too emotional as well.
Yeah, I think he's way too emotional.
Yeah, definitely.
And that emotion's getting in his way.
But if he leaves, where does he go?
Out. He's too old.
Well,
he comes in.
He can go to McLaren.
Oh, shame.
What in race is Ricardo? I think my wife will be upset.
I'd like to see Danny go to Ferrari. I think we'll see something interesting if that happens.
Daniel with Ferrari.
Mm.
I think you're right. I think Daniel Ricciardo...
Yeah,
and Leclerc in Ferrari could be formidable against Mercedes, because Leclerc seems to. I mean, I saw a little bit of emotion out of him on the track at Silverstone.
Yeah,
where I don't know if you noticed when
frustration
he exert or verbalized his frustration over the radio.
Yeah,
and my initial thought was, don't do that. Don't do that. Because if you notice when Hamilton verbalizes his frustration, what does he do?
He's monotone.
He says, guys, how did we get that right? You know, whereas if you listen to Vettel or even in this instance Leclerc, you, hear the emotion.
Beep, beep, and that's the mistake.
I think is that emotion, and maybe Leclerc's just got to learn. But Hamilton is absolutely cool as a cucumber, but says what he needs to say. You know, I think he's not necessarily unbeatable either, Hamilton.
Definitely not.
Rosberg says.
Yeah.
He makes mistakes too.
Rosberg beat him in the car that was, you know, the same as Hamilton's, and Hamilton was at the top of his game at the time, but you have proof there and there that he's not unbeatable.
He's not unbeatable. Yeah.
He just has everything going for him at the moment. He has a strong team, a strong strategy, a good car, and he's mature enough to sort of just
and finding luck everywhere. It's strange.
So in this incident,
the better he gets, the more lucky he gets as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got to practice to be lucky, right? Yep. So let's listen to the interview, the post-race interview of Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen, and you decide for yourself which one is more emotional. I think Max got a little bit of emotion still, but Vettel, you know, he doesn't even want to engage in the conversation, which is sad. You know, Hamilton at least engages in the conversations, even if he's wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Hamilton fan, so for me to say that as not being a Hamilton fan, let's listen.
Sebastian, what a shame. What happened on your point of view?
Well, obviously he passed me into 15, and then I tried to get back. I thought that there will be a gap opening. It looked for a little time that he's going to the right, but then, yeah, that didn't happen, and then I was too close and too late, so I couldn't avoid the crash.
Max, amazing fight, you and Charles Leclerc, but then what happened? Oh, must be really frustrating. Tell on your point of view what happened.
Yeah, I think, of course, we had a good pace. I didn't want to risk too much because Charles was defending quite well, and I was, yeah, you know, I didn't want to risk a crash. So, but then the team made a good call with the pit stop. And then I was, of course, catching Seb, and we got by around the outside. And I guess then he misjudged his braking into the left-hander and hit me from behind. So, yeah, it was very unfortunate. Otherwise, we would have definitely been on the podium.
So you can hear right at the end of that, and if you watch the video of this interview, Vettel just all he wanted to do was get away from the interview.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want to be there. She was keeping him there against his will. Max was more engaged, and you could see in the video interview that he actually wanted to give his opinion, but Vettel just wanted to run away.
Yeah.
You know, which is a sign of his emotion, which I think is causing his problems. That's my opinion anyway. What do you think, Wandile?
I agree. Also, on that note, I just want to commend Max. He's grown so much in the last few years. He used to be a loose cannon.
For crashing.
Yeah, crashed happen. They'd crash into him, and you know, or he would crash into somebody, and he would be like, they were in the wrong.
Yeah.
But now, even when situations like this happen, he's very calm, and you know, he moves on. Let's get to the next race. Let me beat you on the track and not off the track. With my fists.
Well, I mean, I was surprised to hear him say he wanted to avoid a crash, and you know, Leclerc was putting him under a bit of pressure. So yeah. I was surprised to hear him say that he was actually thinking about not crashing.
I think we're going to see the two of them fight for the next few years.
I think Verkrashen and Leclerc are the two top drivers in the future.
That's to watch for the future.
Lando Norris is also there. Let's not forget.
He's just not in a great car, I suppose. Yeah.
Definitely.
So what do you think? What do you think's up for the next race?
Belgium. I think we're going to Belgium this week. If I had to guess, I think Red Bull is going to be the biggest threat. I think Max might win. Alternatively, it'll be a Mercedes 2-3, or a Mercedes 1, and then Max 2nd.
Where do you think Ferrari's going to be?
I don't know. Honestly, I can't even predict anymore. They're so unpredictable. It's scary.
Maybe that's Ferrari's strategy. Keep them all guessing.
But isn't this what everybody wanted? The unpredictability of Formula One. We don't know who's going to win anymore. You know, if you ask somebody last season this time, they were, okay, who's going to win? Oh, Mercedes, it's going to be another one, too. Yeah. And it's over. So this is what people wanted. They wanted the unpredictability of the give us racing to come
give us
back.
Racing, yeah.
Well, let's see what happens in Belgium on the weekend, but I'm looking forward to the race. I hope it's close. I hope Ferrari's in the mix, to be honest. I hope Red Bull's in the mix, and I hope Mercedes is there as well, because anybody crashing out or not doing a great job just makes for bad racing. Mm-hmm. On to the next story. All-female W Series has taken a major step towards its goal of women in Formula One. So from next season, the FIA will award super license points to the drivers. The points are required before any driver can compete in Formula One, which is great. In publicly, the series has engendered has already proven that this is positive for several competitors who are convinced it will ultimately deliver an F1 driver. A woman apparently has not raced in F1 since Lella Lombardi 43 years ago.
It's absolutely unbelievable that this is still the case. And I'm so glad that the FIA is finally doing this.
Yeah.
Granted, there was no series which really, assisted women in getting their feet in F1. So this is a great step.
It's a brilliant step.
It's a necessary step. Yeah.
So, 40 super license points are required to race in Formula One, with 25 to take part in a free practice session. So, there's only one woman currently racing with points, and that's British driver Catherine, how do you say her surname? Leger. But the problem is her points are about to expire. The number that are expected to be allocated in the W Series is between 12 and 18 for the first place, and the series hopes that as the calendar expands in the future, the points will increase. So we have our very own Tasman Pepper in the W Series, although she's coming 7th or 8th, which is great, and she seems to do very well when she starts 17th on the grid and ends up 7th or 8th. She crashed out in the last race, which was unfortunate, and on the first turn. But that's racing, and that's what happens.
I mean, I've got a thing here from her Twitter account. It just says, much better day today, P12 to P6. Overall, the weekend didn't go according to plan, but happy with how it ended. A huge thanks to the engineers and looking forward to the next race.
Yeah.
So, girl's got talent. P12 to P6. That's six places.
And she's done that almost every single race.
So she's very good at fighting back.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, the W Series, as we heard from Tasman Pepper, the winners probably won't go through to things like Formula 2 or even currently have a shot at Formula 1. But more importantly, the winners more than likely won't be in W Series next year because they will progress, which means that the midfield are the ones that get to race in W Series in the next year.
What would be the next logical step? A test driver for an F1 team?
Well, Britain's Jamie Chadwick, she leads the championship at the moment. She's already been taken on by Williams F1 as a development driver.
Okay, so development driver, not test driver.
No, not test driver. But, I mean, it's a step in the right direction.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah,
you need that experience. Yes.
So we're watching very closely. We hope that Tasman Pepper is in the W Series next year again. And then after that, who knows? The sky's the limit. Maybe by that time there's more points on the table for Formula 1, and hopefully she ends up in Formula 1 in the long run. But next is our car review, and we are looking forward to reviewing what today, Martin?
The new, brand new Mazda 3.
So in our auto talk is the brand new 2019 Mazda 3. Give us the lowdown.
Snorefest.
No, be nice. You see, here's the thing. Mazda has this reputation of doing things a bit differently. They stuck with the rotary, and I mean, they launched the MX-5 in an era when affordable roadsters were basically a dying breed. And the MX-5 went on to great success, and they managed to keep the rotary going for about 40 years. So well done to Mazda on that. But that kind of demonstrates the rebellious streak.
Yeah.
And the new 3 actually stays true to their ethos, except for one problem, but we'll get to that in a moment. Let's look at the good stuff first. The sedan is actually a strikingly attractive car.
It's a beautiful car. I wish Mazda would just change the front grille a little bit. It's getting old.
Yeah, well, that's their design language. So yes. they are changing it in small increments with each new model release. But I mean, it is, as far as that category goes, a really, really attractive car. The hatchback, I'm not so sure about. They call it emotive. I call it blobby.
I call it ugly. Lelijk.
I just see a puffed up Suzuki Ignis when I look at that back end. I'm sorry. I can't buy into their marketing blurb. The thing is, the car is actually really fun to drive if you prioritize the ride handling balance.
What does that mean?
It means it rides like a much larger car. It has a very quiet and compliant ride.
Yeah.
But when you start throwing it around in corners, it's genuine fun to drive. The steering is sharp. The suspension is well sorted out. It's really nice to drive on a twisty road. Now, the only problem with this car is in the engine compartment. Most other manufacturers have now started on the downsizing trend, where you get 1.4 and 1.6 turbos.
Yeah.
Mazda, they call their approach right-sizing.
What does that mean?
I believe the engineers think that the turbocharger is cheating, but it's not. And as a result, these cars, both engine derivatives, is a 1.5 and a 2-liter, and they're both very low on torque relative to their competition. So 88 kilowatts and 153 newton meters from a 1.5 is a solid figure, but it's not good enough in today's time, in today's terms.
Snorefest.
Now, the 2 liter is a lot better.
I'm still stuck on why someone would think that turbocharging is cheating.
Yeah.
So that's like saying putting an electric motor between the two front wheels is cheating, rather put it where the engine used to be.
Yeah, now the frustrating bit is Mazda has a lovely, amazing, brand new technology forced induction engine with more torque and more power and more everything available overseas. But the engineers say
our fuel is bad.
South Africa's petrol isn't good enough.
And I think
that's just a cop out, because even Volkswagen, the Golf R, they also came with the same story. It's a hot climate and our fuel quality is dodgy. And within 3 years, the Golf R went up to the full fat 228 kilowatt version, in spite of our fuel being dodgy. So if only they could bring this car with Skyactiv X. My suspicion is that the Skyactiv X engine, this brand new one, is either too expensive or they can't keep up with demand from America.
I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah. So I think South Africa, being a small market, we kind of forced to stick with the small engines or with the
non-turbocharged engines.
And then there's another problem, but we'll get to that in a little while. The cabin quality is actually really astounding. Mazda has, for the last couple of generations, really stepped up the game in terms of their cabin design and materials, but this one is genuinely next level.
Is it like CX-5?
Better.
Ooh.
This is as close as you can get to an Audi interior without going into
I mean, I must be honest. The CX-5 and CX-6's interiors are beautiful. They're really, really nice looking cars. And if this Mazda is anything like the CX-5 or CX-6,
three and five.
But anything like the CX-3 and CX-5, then this car's got to be beautiful inside.
It's actually even better. Every single touch point is soft touch material. And they actually took the Audi approach. They have engineers to determine that it takes exactly six newtons of force on any trim panel to deflect 1.5 millimeters. That's the kind of pedantic attention to detail they pay to the attention, and it shows.
Gee whiz.
It's really beautiful inside, and it's very well equipped as well. I mean, even in base spec, standard equipment is comprehensive, 8-speaker audio with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, color infotainment, LED headlights, head-up display, standard, 16-inch alloys, push-button start. It comes with pretty much everything already, even in base spec. The only thing it needs is an engine. And then we get to the problem.
He talks like the thing doesn't have blank engine.
Well, the thing is, when you get overtaken by a 40-year-old MGB on the freeway and you're gunning it in third gear, almost at the red line, then you know a car needs more power.
More power, baby.
More power, baby. Especially considering the pricing.
Yeah, that's my next question.
That's actually the big downfall here. Entry level sedan is the cheapest at $357,000. And that's about $20,000 more than you'd pay for an entry level Golf. So it's up against some very, very stiff competition. All right, it's very well equipped. But then the pricing runs from there to the 2-liter automatic hatchback.
So on the base level, at Mazda 3.5 active manual sedan, $357,000, what would be a comparable car?
I think the closest would probably be something like a Renault Megane or an Opel Astra.
What does the Megane or Astra go for?
I'm not actually sure.
Is it? I'll have a look while you're talking.
Well, yeah. Now, they have a bit of a problem with their product plan as well, because the usable engine, it's the 2-liter, only comes with the highest trim level, which has blind spot monitoring and cross traffic alert and all sorts of other things.
Because that means they want you to buy that one.
They want you to buy that one. But again, at 470,000,
it's like 100,000 more, 100,000 or more.
Yep.
So the Opel Astra base model goes for 301,000 rand.
You see my problem.
So 301,000 rand, that is 56,000 rand.
Yes.
Cheaper than that, than this but Mazda 3. But isn't the interior what makes up for it?
No, sure it does. And the standard spec list as well. I mean, you get,
remember, the Opel Astra at 301,000 rand is a 1-litre turbocharged engine,
which will run the rings around this Mazda.
It's an amazing
1 litre.
Yes. Over the miracle of turbocharging.
Yeah, just turbocharging. Okay.
So that's really the only serious negative I can bring against this Mazda.
Is it underpowered?
Here's some perspective.
Mazda makes really good cars, but they're subject to import tariffs. That's why they're so damn expensive. So, and it's a crying shame.
But now look at this. Renault Megane, 97 kilowatt. So you get more power and more torque already, a dynamic. So it's also very well equipped for 324,000.
So that's more expensive than the Opel.
It's more expensive than the Opel, but still a fair bit cheaper.
But you know, wouldn't you argue that it's kind of in a similar league? You know, it's not like it's 100,000 rand more expensive.
Yeah, but now you look at how much more power you actually get, usable power in.
But that's if you only consider the engine and not the rest of the aesthetics of the car.
That is true. So I think the Mazda 3, as much as I would love to see it succeed, it will remain a niche product. Mazda is aware of this. They've actually adjusted their sales forecasts from about 250 units a month. They've adjusted it downwards to about 150 units a month because the car is now moving up market.
Interesting stuff. Wow. Yeah.
I'd give it a 4 out of 5. It just needs an engine.
4 out of 5?
Yeah.
The way you spoke about the engine, I thought you were going to give it about a 2.
Well, 2.5 out of 5. 2.5 stars.
But 4 out of 5 is good. I mean, how many cars would get a 4 out of 5?
Yeah, but the only
interior's got to be really
good. It only gets 4 out of 5 on the strength of the interior and the standard specification. Mm-hmm. The engine and the price. Really,
this is a good-looking car.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is.
The front,
it's a beautiful thing.
The front has been around for a long time. That big kind of Aston Martin type Golf in the front.
The only thing that really changes there is the headlights just get slimmer.
Slimmer and slimmer. But it looks beautiful. It almost reminds me of a Tesla. Thanks, Martin. I appreciate the rundown of the 2019 Mazda 3. And there you have it. If you want to go and have a look at it, go to autotrader.co.za, and Martin's review will be online. Go and search for that 2019 brand new Mazda 3. The next segment is what we're referring to as Crazy Talk. And what is inside Crazy Talk today?
Lawrence.
Crazy Talk. And believe it or not, there has been a Cadillac parked in on Brooklyn Street for more than 25 years, and it's finally been towed away.
Yeah, this is crazy talk.
This is like, how does somebody like leave a car for I mean, if you have a look at the photograph of this car, it's got newspapers inside. It's like, was there not somebody living inside this car?
It looks like a dumpster. People were just, you know, it became a trash can for the streets.
Yeah, well,
maybe people
honest,
were just dumping things inside it.
to be honest, it's an early 70s C body General Motors product. It probably broke down ages ago, and it was worth less than the metal value itself.
Why did nobody move it, is my question, for so long?
Yeah, why
Americans
for 25 years?
Weird. Brooklyn, especially in Brooklyn, I think people are weird.
I mean, surely 25 years ago, the car looked a lot better than it does today. I mean, it's all rusted, and it looked like it was brown anyway, so maybe they couldn't see the rust as it was going on, but the bloody thing's even got a tree growing through it.
It looks like people were complaining about it as well as a safety hazard. People were just not happy with looking at it.
Yeah, but now there's another quote from another local. It said, "That car is a staple in this community," said a neighbor who goes by the name of Jake. "Those who gawk at it and want to get rid of it aren't real Brooklynites." Remember what I said about people from Brooklyn being weird?
That being said, I don't think they exactly have like a JMPD that rolls around and just hands out fines or something. No. I think their waste collection and their towing are completely different systems. So somebody was asleep at the wheel. Never got the message.
Apparently never woke up.
Never moved the car. I mean, but, surely after about 5 years of the car not even moving, you start to wonder.
I'm surprised it still has wheels on it. Do you remember all those 80s movies?
Yeah.
Mm. You know, the cars in like Brooklyn were always on like bricks because somebody stole the wheels, graffiti sprayed on the side.
Durban beachfront won't have wheels left.
Yeah.
Not true.
You've seen the chains.
True. I think the whole of South Africa won't have wheels left.
Anywhere in South Africa
it won't have wheels left. But this car has been parked in Brooklyn Street in the United States for 25 years and so it's only made the news when it got towed away.
It became a landmark.
Yeah, it became a landmark. A fixture in the neighborhood.
So here's another crazy story. Google Maps has failed.
For the first time and for the last time.
So Google Maps left people detouring traffic problems, and nearly 100 drivers were stuck in an empty field. So rain caused these drivers to navigate towards an empty field. So technology is both a blessing and a curse. With computers in our pockets, we rely on technology to get everywhere. So this just shows that, people blindly follow their maps.
That's true.
And apparently, for nearly 100 Colorado drivers earlier this week, a car crashed on a road leading to Denver International Airport. Caused Google Maps to provide a detour to the drivers who didn't want or couldn't wait. Many were trying to get to the airport. However, the recent rain had turned that narrow dirt road into an empty field and a muddy mess. So cars apparently began sliding around and some got stuck, causing a traffic jam. So this time, though, it was an empty field and no other alternate routes were possible, and these 100 drivers were just stuck.
Stuck, yeah.
So, what does Google do when...
At least it was an empty field and not a lake.
Yes, or a pier.
Tell me more.
Apple Maps, about 2 years ago, just driving off the end of a pier into a lake because Apple Maps told them to.
But how dumb are you?
Don't
drive off a cliff. Okay,
like, how dumb are you to not see the end of the bloody road coming?
How dumb are you to not see a field full of cars stuck spinning their wheels in the mud?
Does Google not just see that there's no moving traffic in this route and then divert people?
Yep. That was what happened.
It's real time because it's taking your GPS coordinates. Mm. Checking how fast you're moving, it's checking how fast the other phones around you are moving, and then sort of calculations tells you, okay, no, this road is busy, go this way.
Yeah. It was just a mess.
So Google responded to this and said in a statement that the company accounts for many factors when determining routes and noticed that the dirt road wasn't marked as private. Okay. Fair enough. However, Google did say unforeseen circumstances like weather can cause even more headaches for drivers. The tech giant concluded, "We encourage all drivers to follow local laws, stay attentive, and use their best judgment while driving."
Remove all the warning signs and let evolution do the rest.
Google Maps cars, they will only, the routes that you can travel that Google Maps will recommend are only on roads that the Google Maps cars have actually traveled down. So it won't recommend a road in a private estate. It won't recommend a through road through a closed community.
I find Google Maps telling me that there's a private road.
Yeah.
So you can navigate through there, but it does warn you. So like Lawrence says, it's not going to take you through there automatically if it's marked private.
Well, the funniest thing about that whole story is the last sentence in the article. If our future AI-powered robot overlords want to eliminate humans, it doesn't even need a powerful military force. Instead, just give us directions to the nearest cliff and many of us Lemmings. Will follow.
Well, give us directions to the nearest cliff and a few of us will actually go over the cliff. I mean, I think the problem is human beings here.
Yes.
We're getting lazy.
You see, there's an old adage that says, real stupidity beats artificial intelligence hands down every time.
I'm now relying on my maps a lot.
There's a good quote that I read once upon a time. It said, best you shut your mouth before you open it and remove all doubt about your stupidity. So, just watch where you're going in front of you. How can you drive off the edge of a frickin' cliff? Or an edge of a bridge that doesn't exist. Or into a muddy field.
Where 90 other cars already stuck.
I wonder what the last guy thought driving along.
What the hell's going on here?
Anyway, so next story is a rare 1968 V8 Ford Mustang was sold with the ashes of the original owner still inside.
Tell me more.
Well, when buying a used car, it's not uncommon for the seller to leave behind some items. I mean, have you ever bought a used car and there's some stuff in there that the previous owners left behind?
I've seen things.
And usually it's junk. It's stuff that people don't want. But this buyer, Zach Taylor, bought a rare 1968 Mustang V8. I mean, the car looks a bit rusted and worn down. It was a rare find because you don't find these cars very often. But inside this muscle car, he discovered the remains of the original owner. Da-da-da-da. According to the post via the Mustang fan club, the muscle car had been parked inside of a BAM in Florida since 1970. So at least it was inside
a container or something,
not on the streets of Brooklyn. when the original owner, James, passed away. Bruce, a good friend of James, asked the family if he could purchase the vehicle from them, and they agreed. The vehicle then moved to North Carolina with Bruce, where he was unable to find the time to repair the vehicle. He then put the Mustang on Craigslist, where Georgia car collector Taylor eventually purchased the car. When Taylor went to view the vehicle, he noticed a strange jar inside and asked Bruce what it was, to which he replied that it was, in fact, James's ashes. Bizarrely, he also stated that the two are to be kept together.
Well, I have a simple solution there. You start the car up, you rev it a bit, and you throw the jar of ashes into the intake. Become part of the car that way. Boom.
That's just horrible, Lawrence. Yeah. That's just horrible.
What did James's family say about this? Were they just happy to sell the car with James still inside? Like
apparently
that really car is haunted now. It's going to be haunted forever.
He really loved his car, and now he's going to stay in it until it goes to the crusher.
Yeah, exactly. So Zach finally purchased the car for $7,000, which is a meager 100,000 rand or so, After deciding the car was too far gone for him to repair, he put it on Craigslist. The vehicle has recently been sold to a car restoration shop in the UK for $23,000, which is some 340,000 rand. So, there you go. Be careful what you find inside your next used car.
Check the glove box.
Check the glove box. Yeah, check under the seats.
You don't ever want to go scratching around in cars at a scrapyard because the things that you will, like Martin said, it will haunt you forever.
Yeah.
It will haunt you forever.
Now, interestingly, I see there's a nice end to this story. The guy who bought it in the UK, he says he owned 25 Mustangs and he currently has 5, and he's going to restore this car. But he's working on a plan to work the ashes into the car's frame.
Oh, wow. So the guy who owned the car actually remains with his car.
They're going to mix it in with the paint and spray him on the outside of the car.
Ash gray.
There you go. Done.
James remains with his car.
Everybody was.
That's creepy as. Yes.
Well, I mean, his wishes were
Upheld, yeah.
Respected. Exactly. Yeah. Then our last story is KC. Area woman's car stolen, so she tracks it down and takes it back. So this is a very interesting story. This particular lady, her car was stolen while she was, when she turned her back, really. And she had stopped at a local Quick Trip gas station to get her daughter. So she was picking up her daughter. And in a few moments, she was away from her 4Runner. Someone hopped into it and stole it.
Wow. Did she leave the keys in the ignition?
She left the truck running.
I think she might have left the truck running. I mean, I suppose in America, maybe you can do these things. In South Africa, that is an invitation. I wonder what happens with insurance companies if you leave your car running and walk away from it and it's stolen.
You are liable.
You're liable. They won't pay. You are liable. That's interesting. We should dig into that.
Yeah, definitely.
You are liable.
Yeah. Yeah, if you
they'll try and find any way to pay.
If you can't supply both speakeasies, most insurance companies will refuse.
So how'd she find the car?
So the thief got away with Reno's purse, cell phone, wallet, and credit cards. And Reno was left with a call to the police and reported the theft. She enlisted her sister's help and tracked the lady for 48 hours by following her credit card records. So this lady who stole the car was dumb enough to go and use Reno's credit cards. So Reno started tracking the card usage as the perp, she didn't know it was a woman at the time, went and bought food at Taco Bell. After buying food at Taco Bell, used the card at Walmart and at other gas stations. She also tracked her cell phone's location. So this thief also left the cell phone on.
Amateurs.
Hey? Yeah. They haven't been to South Africa. 2 days after the theft, one of the credit cards was run at another Quick Trip, which was one of the same sort of gas stations she stopped at initially. And Reno hoofed it down to the gas station where the clerk told her that that the woman had been seen. So she asked her sister to go to the nearby local Applebee's, and she went to another one. And lo and behold, the woman who stole her 4Runner happened to walk in.
This is incredible. It's like a movie.
It's like a movie. And carrying her keys and her wallet. So what did she do? She walked over to her 4Runner, got her spare set of keys out, and drove off. Taping a Facebook video to celebrate her efforts, she called the county sheriff's office, and deputies arrived to assess the trio of women nearby the store. Reno took a video of the arrest, recording the alleged ringleader walking out of the store with a pair of Reno's shoes in her hands. It gets funnier.
That's nasty.
So she doesn't want the car anymore, apparently, because she says there's an awful smell inside and it was trashed.
In just two days,
it was trashed.
Leaving what police said were probably bodily fluids in the seats and an awful smell and breaking the back hatch. So, yeah, probably sure she doesn't want that car anymore.
That's nasty.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's pretty brave to put yourself in harm's way to try and track down a would-be thief.
I like the poetic justice of stealing back your own car.
I love it. It's good. I mean, I wouldn't put myself in that position because, you know, in South Africa they carry guns. Over there they're opportunists, looks like it. But
they carry guns as well.
That's it for the show. So what do you got planned for the rest of the week, Wandile?
Just work and more motorsports.
Okay.
And sitting with you guys, I guess, yeah. Good getting to know each other more.
Lawrence, any interesting cars?
I'm getting the Opel Grandland diesel on Wednesday.
Oh, lovely.
So out of a BMW Z4 into that, you can imagine my excitement.
Since you can drive over stuff.
You're struggling to contain your indifference, Lawrence.
Yeah. Martin.
I'll be driving a new Hyundai Tucson version, a new derivative, on Thursday.
And on Friday, you got Suzuki Booster Jet.
No, that's next week.
Oh, sorry. It's next week.
Well, but that's something. Don't forget to come and bring me that Hyundai Tucson to have a look at. I'd love to see that particular variant. I think Hyundai's done a really good job.
Yeah, they have.
Done a really, really
it's
good job.
It's the second gen of the sport. So.
Yeah. So, so anyway, that's it, folks. And see you in 2 weeks' time.
This is CliffCentral.com.